discussed the boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign that's been building since, I guess, 2005, when it was first called for by a coalition of Palestinian organizations. We've been talking about that from time to time on WBAI, but the whole movement, the BDS movement, seems to be picking up steam these days.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a number of cases of filmmakers withdrawing their films from Israeli film festivals. There was a big controversy when Leonard Cohen recently decided to perform in Tel Aviv. This was seen as a controversial decision, which I would say even a year or two ago it would not have been. One of the most recent examples is a Canadian filmmaker pulled his film out of the Toronto Film Festival, which is a major international film festival. A lot of big films premiere there. And interestingly, one of the reasons that he said he'd pulled it out was it was because there's a whole focus on Tel Aviv at the festival, a spotlight on Tel Aviv, a series of Tel Aviv films. But it's not just that. It's that the Israeli government, as part of its Brand Israel campaign, has dumped tons of money into this. They've paid for filmmaker plane tickets, receptions, parties. The Israeli consul general there in Toronto actually described this Tel Aviv film screening at the Toronto International Film Festival as the culmination of his year-long Brand Israel campaign.
And it's kind of ironic that as Israel responds to the Building BDS movement, it in fact is firing up the movement even more. We have on the phone Neve Gordon. Neve Gordon's a longtime Israeli peace activist who's been on Beyond the Pale before. He teaches political science at Ben-Gurion University. He's the author most recently of the book, which we've talked about on the show, Israel's Occupation. Now, last week in an op-ed in the LA Times, Neve Gordon explained why he has come to support the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. His op-ed unleashed a firestorm of protest from the expected parties in Israel and in the U.S. Some American Jews threatened to withhold their financial support from his university. Ben-Gurion's president, Dr. Rivka Karmi, expressed shock and outrage, and she suggested that the university may no longer be interested in Gordon's services. She's quoted as saying that academics with such feelings about their country are welcome to look for another home. That is, I guess, love it or leave it. That sort of sounds familiar.
Not a strong expression of support for freedom of speech, one might say.
Indeed, and she also said something about the role of academics having to support Zionism and the Zionist state and the vision of David Ben-Gurion.
We'll come back to that pretty shocking quote later.
Neve, welcome to Beyond the Pale.
Thank you. I'm finally getting to feel at home on your program because everyone thinks that what I said is beyond the pale.
well, perfect. We're glad that you're living up to the name. But we did want to start, Neve, before we get into this really pretty stunning backlash against your op-ed, we wanted to get into the heart of your argument for why, after clearly a lot of deep introspection, you've decided to throw your support behind a measured sanctions program. And I'd like to start with what is probably the line that has disturbed your critics most in that op-ed, which is this, that the most accurate way to describe Israel today is as an apartheid state.
Well, first I'd like to say that anyone that reads this op-ed can immediately sense that it comes out of a deep concern for Israel, and it is not, as many of my detractors have claimed, an anti-Israeli piece or an anti-Semite piece, but actually someone that comes from someone that has invested his life or a large part of his life for struggling in Israel, that wants to raise his two small boys, and it is important also that they're boys in Israel, and that he doesn't want his boys or his neighbor's children or Palestinian children to live in an apartheid regime. And the reason I characterize Israel as apartheid regime is that for the past 42 years, Israel has been controlling the land between the Jordan Valley and the Mediterranean Sea. Within this land, there are 6 million Jews and about 5 million Palestinians. 3.5 million of these Palestinians do not have citizenship or any basic rights. And once we look at the geographic map in this way, and we understand that there's one space and there's some of the people are living under one legal system and a few million of people are living under another legal system, I think there's no other way than to call it an apartheid. Of course, it is not like the apartheid of South Africa. Each apartheid is different. But there are some characteristics that are similar, like the fact that two different people live under two different legal system in the same territory. And basically what I've felt for a long time now and seen for a long time now is that while we are struggling to end this situation for the past 30 years, the situation just deteriorates. Every year things just get worse. And this fact has led me to understand that real change can come only if we receive the help of the international community. And the help must be much more than it was in the past. It must not be empty words, but must be actions. Because until the Israeli center, the silent center, the middle class that is preoccupied with work and sending children to school and going to movies, until it feels that the occupation is costing them money, that the occupation is affecting their daily life, there will not be change. And they will not feel this unless people support the BDS program. But in the article, I also suggest that this should not be done in one sweet moment. I take a sentence from the BDS campaign and underscore it and emphasize it. And the sentence is that this should not be done immediately across the board, but it should be a gradual move sensitive to content and circumstances. And I think this is crucial. I think it's crucial for the collective psyche in Israel that it won't feel attacked by the world, that the cry for anti-Semitism will not be raised continuously, but it should begin with a BDS campaign, a strong one, against everything that is in the occupied territories. It should include companies. It should be people that live there. It should be all the different institutions, including the academic institution of Ariel College. If this does not work, then we should move on to a campaign against companies that support the occupation, and I emphasize in a visible manner, meaning it would be Homeland Security companies, military companies, and so forth. Some of them are traded on NASDAQ, so we could divest from them, etc. And I think this is a pro-Israeli stance. I realize that some may think that it is not. But I want to emphasize that it comes from a deep concern for Israel, for the future of Israel, and for the next generations of Jews and Palestinians living in the area.
Well, it's also crucial, as you point out, that increasingly strong language from both the European Union and from the Obama administration haven't yielded any results, not even a settlement freeze, which technically was agreed to many years ago. I think you point out that settlements since the Oslo Accords were signed have grown from 100,000 to 250,000. In one response to your editorial, another Israeli professor, this is Anat Matar of Tel Aviv University, pointed out that most universities in Israel receive significant contracts from the defense ministry, so they are more organically connected to the military project there than some of the discourse over this question of academic freedom acknowledges.
That's why I mentioned the visible manner, because if you look closely, basically all Israeli society is connected to the occupation. It's been with Israel's existed 62 years, and 61 years, and the occupation's been with us for 42 years. So that's why I say it has to be gradual. I would not begin with the attacking the islands where there is also voices of resistance. I would begin by the people that enjoy it, the occupation the most. I would be strategic about it. It's a political issue, and political issues, you need to be strategic, you need to dirty your hands, and you need to speak with contradictions. It has to be done in a way that we broaden the tent. What I tried to do in my article, although I do not say it as such, say the BDS campaign is not the campaign of the anti-Zionist to want a one-state solution. We need to show to everyone that the BDS campaign can be for Zionist and anti-Zionist. It can be for people that support the one-state solution and people that support the two-state solution, like I do. It can be for people that want a BDS across the board immediately, and it can be for people like Uri Avneri and Michael Lerner, I think, that want a BDS campaign only on the occupied territories and do not want it to move to Israel. I think the BDS movement, instead of remaining this small group, can really become a major movement if we enlarge the tent. And the only thing that needs to unite the people under this tent is that Israel must abide by international law. And the rest, the ideological differences, the strategic differences, I think we can decide to disagree upon. The only thing we don't want under this tent is the anti-Semites. We don't want them because they are anti-Semite, and we have no patience for them, and we should say outright, you are not welcome to this tent.
We're talking with Niamh Gordon, a longtime Israeli peace activist who teaches political science at Ben-Gurion University. His most recent book is Israel's Occupation, and he recently wrote an op-ed in the LA Times, which has unleashed a firestorm of protest in support of what's called the BDS movement, boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel. And I thought perhaps we could talk a little bit more about fleshing out the strategy and tactics that you might advocate and others advocate with regard to BDS. We had a show some time ago about the website whoprofits.org, which is an Israeli website that attempts to identify corporations that are operating in the occupied territories or that are providing the infrastructure that makes the occupation possible, both Israeli companies and international companies, which has actually had some success in getting business taken away from some of these companies. Naomi Klein, in talking specifically about her decision to publish the Shock Doctrine in Israel and Palestine, has made it clear that, in her view, she's boycotting the Israeli economy by not working with an Israeli publisher, but rather working with Andalus, which is an activist press that translates Arabic writings into Hebrew. There is this concern, particularly among people who are concerned about culture and scholarship and so on, that a blatant, rigid boycott of any Israelis coming to, say, the U.S. or any U.S. scholars or performers performing in Israel, that none of that should be allowed. How do you understand how one might deal with this kind of cultural/academic boycott?
Again, I'm following here Naomi Klein, whom you mentioned, and she says very clearly this is not a boycott of specific people. And I do not think specific people should be boycotted. I don't think, and if an Israeli sends an article to a university academic journal, then the article should be boycotted. I don't think that will have the effect that we are interested in. I think each and every incident and question has to be considered within the context it unfolds. If you gave the example of the Toronto Film Festival, I doubt that the Canadian director would have withdrawn the film if there wouldn't have been that whole issue about emphasizing Tel Aviv and supporting it with money from the Israeli government and so forth. If just Israeli films would have been invited to the festival, I'm fairly convinced, and I know this, with people that were working behind the scenes on this, that this director would not have taken the film out.
We have a few minutes left, and we did want to get to this enormous backlash that you've experienced. The Israeli consul in L.A. saying that Ben-Gurion University should be boycotted. As Marilyn mentioned earlier, the president of the university issuing a barely veiled threat about your tenure there, and that noxious comment that Marilyn referred to where the president said Ben-Gurion is a Zionist establishment which fulfills the vision of David Ben-Gurion on a daily basis, and indicating in a letter to the editor at one point that you were perhaps even guilty of treason against Israel. Briefly, your response to this backlash.
I think it has been extremely unfortunate. I think the university responded in a way that does not really uphold academic freedom. I'm not sure the university, looking back at what it has done in the past week, is very happy with the strategy it chose. I think I would even say that the university, through its response, did a considerable favor to the BDS campaign, because otherwise I don't think my article in the LA Times would have received the attention that it received. I think that particularly in times of crisis, both academic freedom and freedom of speech, which is really what is at stake here, has to be protected. That is when freedom of speech becomes important. And there is massive support, not for my view specifically, but for my right to say it. I've received over 5,000 emails in the past few days supporting me. I've received about 1,000 of them from professors around the world, from major institutions. In New York, it would be NYU and Columbia, Princeton, Harvard, et cetera, et cetera. And the Middle East Studies Association issued a letter by the president. It's an organization that has 3,000 professors from around the world, a very strong letter to my university. So the situation is that there is tremendous support, not necessarily for my views, but for my right to say them.
Niamh, before we have to cut off talking with you, we're really struck by some of the ironies here. As Gideon Levy has pointed out, boycott and sanctions is a tactic that Israel itself has used many times in the past, most recently in response to the outrageous article in the Swedish press accusing Israel of stealing organs from Palestinians. There's been calls for a boycott
of IKEA and of Volvo
and so on. Right. And some time back, there was a boycott by package tour operators against Turkey because of remarks by the Turkish prime minister about President Peres. And of course, there's the boycott and sanctions against Gaza. So it's not a question of tactics here, is it? What's freaking people out so much?
Well, there's also the boycott of the donors against my university.
Right, absolutely.
Ironic of them all, I think. We're boycotting your university because Niamh is calling for a boycott.
Right. Yeah, I think one commentator said every left-wing professor in Israel should call for a boycott, and that will put the boycott into effect.
But basically what I think is that boycott is not something one should do very easily. I've been really debating this issue with myself for a long, long time, and I decided that I supported already in January this year, and I didn't write the letter or the op-ed till August. It's not something we should use lightly. It is, we need to remember, still, the way it depends how it's carried out, usually a nonviolent act. But we should never look at it in a light way, and we should really be concerned of its effects, of some of the effects that we cannot really think about. I agree with those that say this is something that you really need to think about.
Well, of course, as you've pointed out, what this has done is really opened up a conversation about boycott that, in fact, hasn't been held as widely before and within the Jewish community in this country as well. So we're just at the beginning of what is going to be an important political process. And as you pointed out, it is a nonviolent strategy, and people have been calling on the Palestinians to be nonviolent. So it's hard to see how they can complain about them then calling for a boycott and so on. Niamh, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I do want to thank you for talking with us today on Beyond the Pale. Niamh Gordon is the author of The Israeli Occupation and is a political scientist at Ben-Gurion University and a very long-time peace activist. Thanks again, Niamh.
Thanks for having me.